Chapter 20. Rouge. Rouge poked at the little box sitting on the table in Aspen's house on a tower and squinted at it suspiciously. This thing has a Kuji's heart or soul or whatever in it. There's no way. No. Way. I only have it because Pilfer triggered while Phantom Hat was under the unconscious debuff, which means it had to be just like in a regular pouch or pocket or something. If it was so important, he would have had it in his main inventory, so he couldn't lose it. She prodded the fancy gold filigree container again, and it plinked as something inside rolled around. Plus, if we stole Akuji's kryptonite, he'd have mobilized every single soldier, cultist, and monster he has to head up here and get it back. He wouldn't just be hanging out back in Bright while Fart Hat heads up here. Aspen rubbed his temples like his head hurt. That's the part one don't understand either. Are you certain you don't have anything else that could be the thing the head librarian was talking about? You do, he hesitated, looking up toward the ceiling as if searching for a diplomatic way to say something, have a tendency to acquire things that aren't yours with somewhat worrisome frequency. She resisted the urge to stick her tongue out at him. Honestly, she was still a little irked that everyone was so sure she was the girl with more curiosity than sense that H.L. had mentioned in his little fairy tale. Yes, she said very, very calmly. I'm sure. Truthfully, she hadn't been sure. As soon as she logged on, she found Silas sitting right next to her bed, waiting for her. The little bat had flown out with barely more than a welcome back, though she soon returned with Aspen, Sarave, Ned, and rather surprisingly, Manuela, Aspen's former war buddy and friend. Aspen and Sarave had recounted the story of their little visit with the head librarian, and Rouge had started digging through her inventory for any random items that could be, or contain, a black diamond. Thanks to Aspen, she probably now had more storage bags than any other Veritas player, and when she started selling them on auction, she was going to make a fortune. Unfortunately, that meant that it took a while to go through them all. Are you sure he didn't mean Tess? She said she snagged a bunch of loot from that guardhouse in Bright. She's a curious girl, too. She picked up the box and shook it hard, enjoying the looks of horrified fascination on everyone's faces. Manuela slapped the table just hard enough to make everyone jump. It's you, Rouge, the testy soul mage said firmly. You're the only sticky-fingered young girl we have. And the description, more curiosity than sense, leaves no room for doubt. She sighed at Rouge's look of betrayal. You do have a great deal of curiosity, girl. That still leaves room for quite a bit of sense, too. Rouge wrinkled her nose. You have a terrible bedside manner, she muttered, but she did feel a little better. Okay, well, assuming the head librarian wasn't just making things up and he knew what he was talking about, and that FH is the most powerful lieutenant, and that this has the heart in it, what are we supposed to do about it? You just said we can't destroy it. I mean, it's right there in the name, right? Indestructible diamond. Silas spoke up from where she was perched on the table next to the box, happily munching on a mound of sweet peas taller than she was. I bet I could bite it. Or maybe Cor could stomp it? Or Stick could cut it? She paused, then said sadly, I bet Sumi would know what to do. Rouge patted her little friend on the head. She wasn't sure exactly what was going on with Sumi, but poor Silas had been super happy to see her Auntie Arachnid again, and the spider's disappearance was hard on her. Not hard enough to keep her from chowing down on Aspen's sublime produce, but still. Open it, Nekthat grunted, and everyone nodded as if he'd made a brilliant statement. Rouge rolled her eyes. I tried. Actually, the fact that she'd failed was the only thing that made her think that it might actually be something special. Well, that and the time she'd stumbled over Akuji and Phantom Hat while sneaking around the cultist's hideout. Akuji had asked FH for something and FH admitted, the rat, aka Rouge. Rude had it. Akuji certainly hadn't seemed to freak out about its loss, like he should have if it was really important. Of course at the time they'd thought Rouge was trapped and helpless, and they could get it back whenever they wanted, but still. Why was there not an army of undead coming for it, if it actually held Akuji's heart? Why was it just Fanny Hat coming, and pretty quietly too? Aspen turned to Nekthat. Can you open it? The goblin started to reach for the delicate-looking gold filigree box, but hesitated, looking at Rouge. She shrugged. Go ahead. If he gets it open when I couldn't, I'm going to open every lock in this stupid castle. The box clicked and Rouge winced, but so did Nekthat. Trapped, the goblin said, holding up a finger where a single drop of blood welled. Aspen immediately reached over and grasped Ned's hand, bowing his head to pray over the injury, which was already starting to turn the bright green finger a putrescent plum. Rouge's eyes flashed wide, then narrowed. She had, of course, searched the box for traps before attempting to open it. She hadn't found anything, and nothing she'd done had set off any traps, either. She snatched the fallen box back up and examined it. Locked decorative box, this highly embellished golden box was a popular style among ladies of King Chester's court before the war. Often used as jewelry boxes, they are expensive, but hardly unique. Weight 7 pounds. Rarity, rare. She pulled out a set of masterwork lockpicks she'd picked up during her shopping spree in Bright after Aspen gave her about a bajillion gold, which she'd promptly managed to spend most of. Inserting it into the lock, she focused on the feel of the tiny tumblers inside the latch. Sometimes there was a mini-game that went with more difficult locks, but nothing had popped up on this one, so she should be able to. The pick broke and dissolved into golden powder in her fingers. Your lockpicking attempt has failed. Masterwork lockpick broke. Rouge irritably swiped away the notices, instead of waiting for them to fade on their own. She turned the box over in her hands. What did you do, Ned? There are no traps on this thing. Silently, the goblin took the box, turned it over, and placed it back in her hands. She stared down at the golden underside, with its whorls of carved flowers and subtle pattern. Frowning, she focused her vision on it. The description popped up in front of her eyes again, and she almost blinked it away before she noticed a change. Locked puzzle box. This highly embellished golden box was a popular style among ladies of King Chester's court before the war. Often used as jewelry boxes, they are expensive, but hardly unique. Weight 7 pounds. Rarity, rare. You have discovered a poison dart trap. You have discovered a poison dart trap. You have discovered an acid trap. You have discovered unknown trap I. You have discovered unknown trap 2. Your trap detection skill is now level 15. Rouge almost fumbled the deadly little box. Holy Harriet Hamburger. What the heck? Aspen looked a bit surprised. Ah, sorry? I thought you'd noticed. I actually got Birdie something very similar to this to keep her jewelry in, before I figured out that she never wore it. It looks like a normal jewelry box, but the lock is just a decoy. You actually have to know the trick to it, and it's different for everyone. They were very popular for a while, and then the Queen Dowager hired a particularly handsome guard, and suddenly everyone wanted a personal guard instead. Manuela snorted a laugh and reached out for the box. Rouge dropped the surprisingly heavy little thing into the older woman's palm. The soul mage closed her eyes and looked like she was concentrating, then shook her head and sighed. The gold blocks my magic. That's part of why the noble metal is so popular for such things. She turned the object over gingerly. I can say that it's probably enchanted, but that's it. She shrugged and set the box back down on the table. Rouge put her elbows on the table and stared at the nasty little thing, which suddenly didn't look so pretty. She tilted her head, pondering. Aspen, she said, we don't care if Akuji's heart gets broken, right? Or damaged at all. Aspen's eyebrows shot up. I don't think so. It is possible that if it's destroyed too soon, Akuji may be able to find a way to recreate it before we can kill him. It's also possible that if we manage to break it, Akuji will die when his soul attempts to return to an undead body. Why? She flipped the little box over again. What if we just melt it? I mean, if this diamond is really unbreakable, the gold will just melt off it, right? And if the diamond gets too hot and breaks, then yay yes. Everyone stared at Rouge, and she grinned back at them. Rouge dropped the glittering golden box onto the large flat rock that Aspen had suggested using for this little experiment. They had decided not to do it in the castle or even in town, just in case they managed to set off one of the traps, likely, or the thing exploded in a ball of napalm, marginally less likely. Nick that scowled. I don't like this. Rouge rolled her eyes. The goblin, as far as she could tell, didn't actually like anything except Jessica, Sarave, Juniper, and his new goblin girlfriend. It'll be fine, she said, bouncing on her toes as Aspen stood near the rock. He, too, was looking a little dubious. I don't think this is what Gina had in mind when she granted me the mage smithing skill. I'm only supposed to make farming implements. Manuela grinned, her face as excited as Rouge had ever seen it when there wasn't a helpless patient sitting in front of her. Then make a golden hoe, Aspen. All you're doing is melting metal, which you've done 100 times. It's just like when you use the metal in my manacles to make a trowel. Your goal wasn't really to make a tool then either, but it worked fine, and you freed me. Now stop worrying for once and try it. Rouge exchanged a grin with the soul mage, and they both turned to look at Aspen expectantly. The tall man sighed, pulled off his hat, and ran his hand through his shaggy brown gold hair. Slapping his bedraggled headgear back in place, he muttered, "All right, but all of you get back." Holding out his hands toward the seemingly innocuous jewelry box, Aspen frowned. Nothing happened for a moment, and then the air around the golden box began to shimmer like a heat mirage, even though the day was actually a little cool. In spite of Aspen's warning, Rouge edged closer. The elegant filigree metalwork began to sag, slightly at first, and then more and more. The lid of the box drooped, touched the thing inside, and fell in around it like a wet paper bag. The metal began to glow, and with a series of faint pings, all of the traps went off at once. Slender needles shot out to all sides, embedding themselves in grass tree trunks and Aspen's heavy leather boots. A small cloud of acid puffed out one side, instantly vaporized, and melted a shallow trough in the stone beside the liquefying box. Finally, the traps that Rouge had seen as unknown must have been triggered because the box vanished. Aspen froze, staring at the place the box had been. What happened? Nick that swore. Teleportation trap, probably. Sends the object either to some preset place, or some distance away. If it's a set place, the accursed thing is likely back in Akuji's hands right now. Rouge, however, was staring at the spot on the rock where the golden container had been sitting. No, she muttered, then jumped forward, summoning her mombele from her inventory. She threw the weapon toward the melted, blackened stone, and it hit something invisible just before it touched the rock. The weapon circled in the air and slapped back into the girl's palm. She shook her head, blinking furiously. I think it's still there. Aspen, don't stop. Aspen looked frustrated. I have nothing to focus the spell on. Try. We were almost there. I swear it's just an illusion. Illusion break is now level 4. Aspen hesitated, then opened one of the pouches he'd taken to wearing on his belt. One she knew held his lockpicking worm Jimmy, while another was filled with seeds that he could use to attack or bind enemies. Until now, however, she hadn't known what this one held. Metal shavings. Minute curls of metal drifted down to cover the surface of the rock. To Rouge's eyes, there was a faint haze beneath them, as if they were hovering above the stone, but she could tell from the way Aspen's mouth tightened in disappointment that he didn't see it. Nonetheless, with a glance at Rouge, he thrust out his hand and focused. The tiny metal pieces practically burst into flame with the force of his spell. They flared into brilliant shades of blue, white, and deep orange, and then shakily gathered into unidentifiable blobs of oxidation. Mingled in with those black lumps, however, was the pure yellow gold of the filigree box, and in the center sat a deep black lump that seemed to take in light like a black hole. Akuji's soul. Everyone stared at the black lump as the hot metal pooling around it hissed and popped. By the time Aspen finally remembered that he could quench the metal and did so, the ores had settled into an abstract art-like swirl of pure gold mingled with black, silver, and vaguely coppery bits that Rouge suspected wouldn't have looked out of place if it was displayed in some fancy nouveau art shop. That's it? Silas finally asked, breaking the silence, at least for Rouge and Aspen. It doesn't look like a diamond, Rouge added, reaching out her hand to prod the thing. Quick as a flash, Nick that had hold of her hand, shaking his head. It's dangerous. Rouge was about to protest when Sarave nodded, adding quietly, according to the head librarian's story, Holding that stone allowed Akuji's soul to take over your King Chester. We don't know what handling it might do to you. Aspen also nodded in agreement, looking over at Manuela. Can you sense anything now, Manuela? The soul mage grimaced. I can feel it from here, but it's like there's some kind of scum on the surface of it, blocking me from being able to tell anything else. I might get more if I touched it. She shrugged, her reluctance clear. Aspen nodded understanding, and looked around at everyone. Well, now that we have it, what do we do with it? Nekthat fingered the hilt of one of his blades. Destroy it. Sarave shook her head in disagreement. As Aspen said before, it's possible that breaking it too soon might simply release the soul to find a new home. Didn't it take a god to help him last time? Rouge asked. He was prepared then, and it still took divine intervention. I think if we break it he'll die or something. Aspen shook his head slowly. He's immeasurably more powerful now than he was then. Though, he frowned, when I saw him before we left Bright, he looked far weaker than he was when I killed him the first time. Rouge pointed her finger at him. There, see? He's just resurrected once, so he's used up all his stored power. He has to be a total wimp right now. Manuela tapped a finger on her wide leather belt. Not necessarily. The power of one's soul isn't always reflected in one's physical body. Silas looked around at everyone. No, really, she squeaked. Is that it? Rouge had to choke down a giggle at the almost betrayed sound of the bat's voice. Clearly, she had been expecting something more impressive than a piece of rock that looked more like old coal than a diamond. Scratching her friend's soft ears, Rouge conveyed the question to the group. How do we know that's it? Nekthat actually looked amused, and Sarave flashed her sharp teeth for a moment, before raising her hand to cover her smile. It's a rough diamond, Sarave said. Much of what you see is kimberlite, not diamond. The diamond itself would have looked like glass before it turned black. Cautiously, the goblin pointed to a few sharper, shinier pieces of the black chunk. These are actually diamond. If the gem is solid inside there, it's one of the largest I've ever seen. Oh, that was right. Goblin princess. Rouge guessed that Sarave probably knew a lot about rocks and gems, or at least enough to know what was valuable and what wasn't. So, this unbreakable diamond is really just a big chunk of rock? Manuela chuckled darkly, her slightly raspy voice derisive. A chunk of rock worth a kingdom or two. No wonder this thing ended up in the hands of the king. It would have taken a little while for someone to identify it, but once they did, the only person who could afford it would be royalty. No doubt Chester was getting ready to use it in one of his ridiculous dioramas. Rouge blinked, looking to Aspen for an explanation. Aspen chuckled, but a little sadly. King Chester was an artist. He was also a mage, and used his magic to create and install some truly amazing dioramas. He built a 1/16th scale replica of his palace once, and populated it with tiny maids, cooks, and courtiers who really moved. He shook his head. I never understood how a man could be a genius and an idiot at the same time. He should have been a virtuoso sponsored by a king, not a king himself. He never truly cared for anything except his craft. That was all very interesting, but Rouge was stuck on one part of it. He was a mage? Aspen nodded, looking thoughtful. That's a good point. I had been assuming that Akuji was somehow able to choose his new host and simply waited for someone of high rank, but it's possible that the person must be a mage. Manuela's eyes were distant as she nodded. That would make sense. Our bodies and our souls belong together. From what I was told during my training, that's part of why some souls wait much longer in the chaos pool than others. Perhaps Akuji must find a compatible host, and that host must have magic of their own in order to be suitable. Sue, Rouge said, drawing it out, does that mean a person without magic can safely hold this thing? Aspen and Manuela exchanged glances and shrugged simultaneously. Maybe? Manuela said. Rouge tugged at one of her braids. Manuela, could you tell if this fancy rock tried to do something to somebody? Like before it was too late? She waggled her hand. Maybe, she said again. Aspen frowned and reluctantly offered, I think I could. I can tell when someone's spirit has been touched by, he hesitated, quirking a smile at Rouge, Chris. Chris was what they had decided to call Apophis when they realized that just saying a god's name was enough to attract their attention. So Rouge nodded her understanding, though everyone else looked confused. Sarave shook off the distraction and asked tentatively, Aspen, do you think any of your goddess-given skills would help? She gently touched the glove that covered Aspen's tattooed right hand, and he looked pensive. I don't think so, he finally offered. All of them except detect evil are meant to be used on people, and we already know this thing is a lump of pure evil. Manuela hummed. In a way though, this is a person. If a Kuji is truly able to shed his flesh like a snake sheds its skin, then this is more truly him than the meat puppet he's using. Rouge shuddered at the mental image of a Kuji as a person-shaped serpent, sloughing his outgrown skin. It can't hurt then, right? I mean, you can try Winnow or Clarity, Aspen? He shrugged. I guess so. I think not Clarity, since using it incorrectly may lead to unforeseeable consequences. And we're already in the midst of an unpredictable situation. Winnow, though. He hesitated. It has the possibility of damaging the spirit on which it's used, as I suspect it did with the Justat who attacked us when the goblins arrived. Manuela scowled. I never thought I'd say this about anyone, given my calling, but I don't really care about the stability of a Kuji's soul. He should have returned to the Chaos Pool centuries ago, and if he's a little less whole when he goes, well, too bad. She shrugged dismissively. Aspen turned to Sarave. What do you think, Your Majesty? The Goblin Queen's lips tightened and she rubbed her forehead. There is no chance it will injure you. I don't think so, Aspen said. That doesn't sound like certainty, Aspen, Sarave said, raising one black eyebrow. He pulled off his hat and ran his hand through his sweaty hair so it stood up in spikes and curls. There is no certainty anymore, Sarave. That's the one thing of which I am certain. Manuela and Nekthat both snorted at Aspen's feeble joke, but Sarave just shook her head, smiling fondly up at the tall man. Then try it, if you think it wise. It was Aspen's turn to snort, but he turned back to the dull lump of rock surrounded by a pool of hardened metal. I think everyone else should step back. Manuela and Nekthat instantly fell back, though Ned stayed right behind his sister, who didn't budge. Rouge, after battling her own indecision, finally stepped back with Manuela. As curious as she was, Silas was on her shoulder, and she wouldn't risk her friend being hurt. Sarave reached out to touch Aspen's arm. Stop if it seems dangerous, Aspen. The druid farmer stared down at the small goblin queen, and the expression on his face was so full of conflicting emotions that Rouge couldn't even begin to guess what he was thinking. Finally, he held out his tattered, shabby hat to the royal goblin. Hold my hat, he asked. Sarave promptly accepted the smelly, filthy thing, gripping it firmly in her hand as she stepped back and away from Aspen, her movement echoed by her brother. Aspen turned and knelt next to the hunk of unshaped jewel and minerals. He pulled off the glove covering his tattoos and held out his hand. Uno, he murmured. A gale force wind sprang up from nowhere, whipping Aspen's hair and clothes into a wild frenzy. The earth where he knelt seemed to bubble, and then plants shot up all around him. Vines and stems twined and flowers burst forth, bloomed, and died back so quickly Rouge's eyes could barely track the changes. Dirt and leaves whipped up into a mini tornado, and Aspen raised his arm to shield his face and eyes. Sarave made a wordless sound of protest and started to step forward, but Ned grabbed her arm, turning his body so he was between his sister and the whirlwind. Manuela's lips firmed, and her toes dug into the ground as if readying herself to run, though she didn't actually move. Rouge felt Silas shift as if she'd launch herself from her shoulder, and reached up to cup the bat in her hands. Let me go. Silas yelled. Something's wrong. Rouge shook her head fiercely, feeling just the edges of the windstorm pulling at her own hair and clothes, trying to yank her off her feet so she could tumble into the spinning squall. We have to wait and trust Aspen, she sent back, feeling as though her words would be torn away, though the wind was eerily silent. As abruptly as it had begun, the tempest ceased, and everything it had picked up simply stopped in midair before falling back to the earth in a series of soft thuds. The last thing to fall was Aspen,